now. Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Pan. This satsang is for Saturday, May 30th, 2015. And I hope it serves you well. I really do. I am fortunate enough and blessed enough to have a few people here and there always offering me questions, things that are on their minds about their life. And the thing that I always find so interesting about people's questions is that they are so articulate about what it is that they want to know about their life. Interestingly enough, most people don't have much question about their life. They don't really care too much about it. They love the circumstances of their life and all of that, but they're not much interested in the depth of it. The people that write me, people that listen to this program, this satsang, and all of the questions that I answer through their generosity is very astounding to me. And I want to thank all of you who listen to this part of my work. And for those of you who support it, of course, with your donations, it is only through your gifts that this program exists. Your tax-deductible gifts make it possible through sponsorship. If you become a sponsor, you support this offering and our TV series and all the things we do on Aspire to be of service to humankind. So I want to thank my sponsors. I want to thank my mystery donor. And I want to thank those of you who are kind enough to write me and offer me questions. I am deeply moved. And if you ever have a question you want to have, you know, answered in my own inimitable way, I'd be honored. I'd simply be honored. Just go up to the top of the page here and you will see contact. And you click on it and send me an email. And if you don't want me to use your name, and if you don't want me to use where you listen to us from, that is fine. The question is most important. First question comes from Russell, and he says he lives in Northern California. I have a simple question for you, Greg. Why are we here? Russell. Russell, this question has been asked many different ways and many different times by all of us in different circumstances and conditions that we find ourselves in. I understand the question very well. I don't know, and I've tried to answer this question, and I want you to forgive me. I've tried to answer this question many times in my career, trying to help people. But I've come to understand something, and I'm not avoiding the question. I'm going to answer it as best I know how, since you asked me. But I'm not so sure anymore that the question is as important as people want to make it. Because I'll tell you why. The answer is not something that can be explained. It's an inexplicable answer. And the human mind is not savvy enough, not diligent enough, not aware enough to really cope with the answer to this kind of question. Now, I can give you an answer. It means something to me, but it might not mean a single thing to you. And so, therefore, it's subjective. To each and every person who asks this kind of question, why are we here? It's deeply subjective. We are here because all of this is. And in the isness of all of this, we find ourselves. But I want to take it even further, and I'd love to be able to take it further with you. But I don't want to get metaphysical, and I certainly don't want to be confusing to you. But what makes you think we is an is and are here in a place? What if this was something more than what my mind can comprehend? Would it be worth pursuing? Would it be worth dedicating an entire lifetime to? I don't think most people would generally think that, people in general merely believe that whatever it is that they are experiencing here on earth is by the hand of fate or a God that they believe in, and that's about it. They don't see their life relative to their consciousness, relative to their karma. And because they can't really cope with any of that, conceive of any of that, invite any of that, embrace any of that, they simply don't get it. So now you're asking a question like I had when I was a kid. When I would look at that bicycle that I got when I was about 5 years old, and I saw that monster two-wheeler, and I did not believe in any way, shape, or form, Russell, that I could get on that bike and ride it. It was absolutely impossible. Two wheels? You need at least four. How was I to keep my balance? How was I not to fall off that bicycle? So I let it sit there for quite a few weeks. Then my father put on some training wheels, okay? And then I felt a little safer on that. Because the first time I tried to get on the bike, I fell. Second time, fell again. Third time, fell again, you know. So it was, I was getting hurt. And I had this belief, Russell, that a bike could not be ridden on two wheels. And yet I saw my friends doing it all the time. And I thought to myself, I must be really screwed up because I can't do things like that. Well, I got the training wheels. And then I went off with the gang, okay? And we would do things, and I was the only one with training wheels. You know, I was like, you know, the last one to pull my thumb out of my mouth. That's kind of the way it felt. And we'd have a good time, but then I wore out the training wheels. And it became a hazard, not a help. Now I couldn't go out and be with the gang because the wheels were all run down and broken. And my father said to me, you're going to have to learn to ride it without the training wheels. Well, that was unbelievable to me. Unbelievable. See, that's kind of like your question. I could give you answers that are like training wheels. And that's really what religion and philosophy is all about. They're training wheels. I don't know if they really have anything to do with the meaning and the truth of life. I don't think they do. But I don't believe in philosophy and I don't believe in religion. They don't help anyone. They just massacre people. And they're like training wheels. Well, one day, my father took off the training wheels and he parked the bike in the garage and said, when you want to ride it, it'll be there, but it won't be with the training wheels. Okay, so I'm 30 years old now, and no, so, oh, I'm sorry. Anyway, so I'm looking at the bike thinking, I'll never ride you again. Not ever, not never. Then one day, the kids all go over to this one neighbor's house, and the mother was so kind, she made cookies for us, packed them all up, and said, now go ride to the park and, you know, do your cookie thing. Well, she handed me the bag, but I was going to walk because I didn't believe I could ride the bicycle. And then everybody got on their bikes, and one kid said, come on, Greg, grab your bike and come. Well, that's all it took. I don't know what it was. Something in me broke. I grabbed the bike, the necessity and the need to be with the group, you know, that be with the herd, you know, the tribe. Get on that bike. I took the cookies. I put them in a little satchel I had on the bike. I jumped on the bike. Never thought of falling off. Never, never occurred to me. I just rode off. And one of the kids looked at me and said, Greg, you don't have your training wheels anymore. And I looked down and by God, he was right. But by then it didn't matter. I was already on the bike. I was already riding. I hadn't thought of anything but being with the gang and having the cookies. The cookies were a definite pull. So there you are. That's the meaning of life. When you are no longer interested in the training wheels, when you're no longer interested in just, you know, trying to get along through haphazard belief and theories, when you want the direct experience of it all, your own, like grabbing your own bike and riding it, the direct experience, you'll have it. I'm not going to give you more philosophy, more religion. It wouldn't be serving you well. It wouldn't be serving humankind. One day, you'll want to know what this is all about. With all of your heart, with all of your soul, with all of your strength, you're going to want to know. And when that moment comes, that will be a very blessed moment. A very important moment. And that's when you will begin the process of meditation. That is when you will be getting the process of realizing consciously that the only thing that matters are those things you can take with you through death. And it won't be what our emotionality dictates to us. You can only take love, authentic love. And that is the most important thing in life. Love. I hope that helps you, Russell. Please forgive me. Namaste. I can always answer these questions with philosophy, but I just don't think that helps anyone. You start developing a philosophy, then you start developing ideals and beliefs that have nothing to do with the meaning of life. And before you know it, you've created a separate reality in your life. And I don't want to do that with people. It is the direct experience that matters the most. And until a person has that direct experience where they are, so to speak, invoked into something beyond the common denominator of their human thinking and what the mind can accept. I'll tell you, I've had some experiences where I was experiencing many things that my mind could not understand. And rather than fighting with it, I've come to the point of just allowing it. My students will tell you that. Okay, let's go to Carmen in San Francisco. What does it mean to waste our life? You speak a lot of this in your work. I hear this on your TV program and your radio programs. What do you mean by waste your life? I am a person who believes now in waste not, want not. And if I don't waste my life, I won't be wanting another thing in my life. I have found that when I am just being frivolous with my lifetime, and I've been as frivolous as anyone else, I think, on this planet, I realize that I have more wants. When I have more wants, then I can go out and I can fulfill them, but it doesn't change anything within me. This is why you will hear people say, I thought money was going to make me happy. And the more money I made, I thought I'd be happier. What it made me was indifferent and lazy. I've heard this with people, and they're right about that. What is it to waste my life? When I am searching for something to cure Greg's boredom, that is when I may know I have wasted my life. Life is not a matter of trying to be amused to the day I die. But life is not about the whole idea of trying to learn about it or understand it through my human psyche, because my human mind cannot understand anything. My human mind is my human mind. And all it can do is think and believe what it thinks and believes. And that's as far as it'll ever go. And I would hate to think that I was restricting my life down to the nubs, where it was simply a matter of me trying to amuse myself through my lifetime. People think they're doing well when they're amused. I find this really interesting. It's a kind of a strange deal to me. If they're amused and they have a lot of entertainment, or they get an emotional kick out of something, they think they've done well. They do. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I've been amused. I've been worried. I've been hurt. I like what Neil Diamond said. I weep, I ache, I am, I said, I am. We all are like that. We weep, we hurt, we ache. At times we think we're laughing, but it isn't for long, because soon we begin to realize we're laughing at ourselves and our own concepts of life. To waste my life means that I have become conventional, pedestrian in my mentality. It means that I live to breed, live to get my woman or my man, and then I breed, and then I make babies, and then I have to pay for them. And we call that family, and it's a herd kind of thing. We're a tribal mentality, our DNA. And that's all it's about, reproduction, and then getting that child through school to try to get it to survive. It's so primitive. And even though we're way overpopulated, we just keep going on, you know, because we're not very bright. I saw an interview many months ago on YouTube with Gore Vidal, who I deeply admired. I thought Gore Vidal was one of the most intelligent person I have ever seen in the Western culture. He was really intelligent. And he said in about 1964 that the biggest sin he ever saw in the world were people making babies who weren't in love with each other. And boy, did that hit the chord with me. But that was way back in 1964. And everybody hated him for whatever he said, because everybody said he was a grouch and a critic. And human beings don't like to be corrected. So it's hard not to waste our life. Because, frankly, we don't want to be told what we're doing. We really don't. We just want to do the things that pleasure us, the things that come to us through urges, emotionality, and we just want to keep it right there. We don't want to change. We don't want to grow. We don't want to mature. We don't want to do any of that. We just want to keep things the way we want to keep things, so everything is comfortable to our emotionality. So when I give myself over, Cameron, to my emotionality, and I say to myself, well, I'm not emotionally comfortable, or I'm not emotionally happy, that's when I start wasting my life away. That's when I start doing the things that are ugly. I've spent a lot of time with the parts of myself in me that have been wasteful. I don't do that anymore. I'm very succinct in what I do and what I am working on, so I just don't do that anymore. But when I used to, when I was younger, I found that life was like going from one thing to another. I felt like monkey mind, going from one thing that I wanted to another thing that I thought I wanted to another, and it never really culminated in anything very meaningful. Before you know it, your life is over. You don't have the capacity to go any deeper. You can't meditate, can't work upon yourself. And the next thing you know, you're laying in a bed, you're dying, and there you are again doing the same thing you've done over and over and over and over and over again, but you don't know it because you can't really conceive of that. You can't really work upon yourself. You can't really expand yourself. There is no consciousness. So all you're doing is repetition of living. And this is why people get annoyed. They think, oh, Greg, it's just philosophy. You don't know this and you don't know that. And okay, you can say that, and I'll go along with that, but neither do you. All you know is what you're doing now. And you got to ask yourself, is this all there is? Is this as far as our life is going to go? to me, Cameron, the way I waste my life is by thinking about it and coming up with some kind of conclusion or some kind of belief system or some kind of philosophy that tells me I'm not. It's horse manure, and I just don't do it. It's all about consciousness. It's all about developing a state of being, a state of consciousness. And I can see in my youth what a buffoon I have been, and I don't do that anymore. Because I don't want to waste another moment of this precious thing called my life. And whoever walks into my life, whoever is there, I take it with great sanctity. They're there because karma brought us together. Our fate has brought us together. And I'm thrilled. No matter who they are, there isn't anything I wouldn't do to help make love possible. And that's all I know. And I hope that helps you. Please forgive me. Namaste. Last question is from Suzanne. She does not tell me where she listens to us from. I feel threatened by the idea of looking objectively, at my life. It really bothers me. Why, Suzanne? Suzanne, I'm going to be very honest with you. Most people have a very hard time looking at their life, men and women. The more vain a man or a woman is, the less they're going to want to look at their life and objectively and see exactly what it is they're doing. If you're a good-looking person, if the culture would say something to you like you're a very handsome or you're a very pretty person, chances are you're not going to want to see what's going on because you can only see what your eyes are telling you. Can't see what's really happening because you don't want to be criticized. And I know people who are very good looking, who are deeply enamored with their looks. It makes them believe their poop don't stink. And they just go off on tangents and all sorts of what I call inner liabilities that do nothing but suppress their ability to see the truth of their own life. Now, I don't know where you fall in all of that, and it's none of my business, but I'll tell you, Suzanne, most of us can only hear what we can hear. We don't want to listen to anything that might help us. We look at it as criticism. And in my work as a teacher, it is hard work. I don't want to criticize anyone. I really don't. I don't see any advantage to it, and I don't see anything that will help another person by criticizing them. And yet, I have to correct people and keep saying to them, no, go over here. Please don't go over there. No, that won't help you. Come over here. No, that happened because of, you know, something you did here, like vengeance, pride, and anger, all that other stuff. And it's hard. I sit day and night sometimes thinking about how can I tell people, my students, what's going on without insulting the absolute hell out of them. But I can't. Some people have forced me to tell them they have to leave. I can't work with them. I don't want to work with them. It's impossible to work with them. So I have all of this going on just like you do. And Suzanne, the only way I can answer it is this. The state of love must be more eminent, more important to you than your circumstances. You must want love more than wanting what you think hurts your emotionality. We have emotionality, too much of it. And this emotionality comes from our DNA and our genetics. It is about survival. It is about the beliefs that we have about right and wrong, good and bad. It's about how we live. Very badly, very poorly on the inside. I had a student recently. I was down in Encinitas doing a gestalt, and he thought his morality was based on what other people thought of him. And then I looked at him and I said, dude, don't you remember? Nobody, and I mean nobody, likes you anyway. So how are you going to determine your morality based on people who don't like you in the first place? Now, he's been with me for almost 20 years, and he still doesn't get it. And I've done TV programs, radio programs, commentaries, podcasts, videocasts, discourses. They don't get it. Suzanne, you can't be hearing everything from the point of view of criticism. You can't take it personally. You just have to see it for what it is. And once you observe what you have been doing and how you've been living, if you have a heart of love, if you have what I call the heart of gold, it won't matter. I've been a buffoon most of my life. I understand what you're saying, but I don't care because my heart is stronger. I don't have the heart of a mouse. You have to have the heart of a lion. And you must want love more than wanting what you think will give you love. And that's the difficulty. Suzanne, thank you for your beautiful question, and please forgive me. Namaste. If you have a comment, a question, or something I might be able to serve you with, please go to the top page here and you will see contact. Just hit it. Email me. I'd love to hear from you. I'd be honored to hear from you. I want to thank my questionnaires here, and I want to thank you for listening, and I want to thank my sponsors for supporting. Without all of you, none of this would be possible. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.